good afternoon, good evening. Depends on where you're joining us from, depends on your time zone. I appreciate you joining me today. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today's episode is going to be very interesting, I promise you, because today's conversation sits at the intersection of storytelling, sales, leadership, and identity. We talk a lot about messaging in business. We talk about brand. We talk about positioning. But very few people actually understand how story drives revenue, negotiation power, and long-term brand authority. My guest today does, and she understands it very well, and she built her business around that. We can't wait to dive into the conversation. Annie Alufua, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. You are a storytelling strategist, the founder of Storied Consultancy, specializing in storytelling and sales, marketing, brand crystallization. I love that term, brand crystallization. A lot of people missed the boat on that one. With client across very continents, all continents, you work with everybody, which is a great success story. And my guest today joins me all the way from Cape Town in South Africa. Thank you so much, Annie, for joining me. Thanks for joining the conversation. To the audience, that's going to be a treat for you. Keep your eyes and ears open on this one. Thank you so much for joining me, Annie. Appreciate it.
Great stuff, Robin. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to share my story.
I really appreciate it. And as we say on this channel, Annie, everybody's got a story. Why don't we start with this one? Tell us your story.
Where do I begin? People often want to understand how I got into storytelling for business. It's actually something that I've done as a business for many years, but I always like to tell the story of when I was a little girl. And that's where my fascination with stories actually began. I was very strange in the sense that where other little boys and girls have bedtime stories read to them, I would actually tell stories to myself. And I would have a great time. It wasn't because I was neglected or anything. It's just that I loved telling stories to myself. So every night I would make up fantasies and stories. And, you know, that sort of, I built on that. And I just had a gift for language and communication. I always did very well at school in all the English tests. It evolved to me being a lecturer at university level in English. And that spread over into corporate training and business and communication. And then I had one of those magical light bulb moments, which we call an origin story, where in the pandemic, people were having a conversation about feeling terribly isolated because this thing called Zoom started to happen and we were all having to interact on the screen. And so people were saying, oh, it doesn't feel the same. And somebody said to me, well, what about storytelling for business? And suddenly that whole trajectory from me being a little girl telling stories all through the journey, I said, this is what I can do. And then that's where Storied was born.
Absolutely. And you know what? A lot of things happened or started as a consequence of, you know, the bad pandemic that we all went through. And this channel actually was born right after the pandemic. Similar idea. Before the pandemic, I'm known for meeting people for coffee all the time. And I think Starbucks owes me a little bit of money. I spent most of my time at Starbucks meeting new contacts, existing contacts, and building relationships. Now, during the pandemic, I did not have a chance to do that. You know, everybody is doing the Zoom thing, as you mentioned earlier. So then I thought, why don't we record these calls? Hence, the Localization Fireside Chat took life and started. Now, so a lot of people go from idea to actualizing the business, but how did you actually get your first customer, convince them that this is a good thing for them, and actually get paid for it? I think that's a challenge in every entrepreneur life they go through right now.
I think it was Richard Branson who makes the quote that you, when you're an entrepreneur, you jump out of the plane and you build the parachute on the way down.
I guess
it's similar to me because I knew that I could understand stories and I was in a business network where people were telling stories. So it just started off, well, what possible value could I get from people telling me their stories? How could I give something back to them that's going to help them grow their business, improve their sales and have valuable content? And it was just talk to me, tell me stories. And that just started with a 90-minute consultation. And then I would just tap into everything I knew, I understood about stories and communication. And I would say to people, okay, stop right there. That story tells me this, 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 and this. And this is what it can mean for your business. And people were like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. And I thought, okay, this is the formula. I'm going to listen. And that's why I always describe myself as a story listener rather than a storyteller. Everyone talks about storytelling. but I am a story listener, and that's how it started. You just learn how to listen well and apply everything you understand about stories and marketing and sales, and you help the person telling the story see it for themselves. And then from there, you build the systems and the processes and the trial and the errors and the feedback until you have a framework that people are excited about and it's getting results.
Now, when you moved from the UK to South Africa, what changed in how you saw business communication and the power dynamics, if you will? Did that change? Did it ever shift for you?
It did shift because there's a different environment, because you're moving from the developed world to the developing world. And so that obviously is going to create a different set of circumstances for how people want to open their shop front, so to speak. And obviously, Africa is a very lyrical, we've got a rich oral history here. So people are much more forthcoming in terms of storytelling. But also there is the sense here when you're working with African, South African business people that they really have to make things happen, and they have to do a lot to make things happen in the absence of all the support materials that you might have elsewhere. So that means that you've got a certain drive, you've got a certain commitment, you've got a certain energy, which I really enjoyed. And I think that became a very good fit for my business in the early stages. It meant that it was a very welcoming environment for storytelling because it's a storytelling continent. So the drive that comes from the developing world, plus that storytelling history, it was a perfect seed, a place for me to plant that seed. But obviously, being British, I had a lot to bring from my background there that I could share here, which I also found was a wonderful alchemy between the two continents, making something magical come together from the two sides of the world, so to speak.
You know, storytelling is such an interesting topic. Now, I've been in business for many years and everybody talks about storytelling. You know, 3 decades I've been at it, and, you know, telling the story about the company, telling the story about a product, telling the story about yourself, telling the story about, you know, in a business context, on a personal context. But most people, founders or most CEOs or most businesses, they say we need a better messaging. And I'm thinking, I don't understand what they mean by that. I don't know what they mean by that. Like, there's when you say messaging, and I was just on a call earlier, messaging could mean million things. So in your definition, what does CEO, founder, businesses in general, when they say we need a better messaging, what does it mean?
The message that they need to share, first of all, is aligned to the goals that they have. And that already helps you start to break it down into useful categories. If you are finding that you want to improve your messaging in a competitive space, then the messages that you need to share will be the ones that define your unique selling point, or what we call the icon factor. If you find that you have an issue where you have to prove the value of your products and services, then the messaging that you need to share will be about the financial benefits, what proves that there's a financial value that's equal to the products and services that you have. If you find that you are perhaps in a field that's unfamiliar to people, maybe you're launching something new, it's a new technology, it's something innovative, then you're going to have messaging that makes people understand what you do because they don't, it's new to them. So the messaging matches the goal. And at Storied, we break that down into 8 distinct groups that match the buying cycle. And then the messages will match the goals you have for that buying cycle. Do I need people to understand what I'm selling clearly? Do I need people to see me as unique and pick me over somebody else? Do I need to have an emotional connection? And that's the messaging that you use to build that emotional connection. Do I need a message that helps people convert during a sales conversation? Then the messaging will do that. So that an easy way in is to think of the goal you have, or the challenge that you have, the pain point that you have, and then the story messaging will speak to and solve that particular challenge and meet that goal.
Annie, when we talk about storytelling and perhaps businesses shifting to a storytelling kind of a sales approach or marketing approach, business at the end of the day, they need to make money, and perhaps storytelling is a good tool in the toolbox to allow them to do that. In your experience from the customers that you've worked with, did storytelling show up in revenue?
I will give you an example from the project that I did just before the holidays last year, where I was finished a project with a large company that was building fuel tanks for the major petrochemical services that we have in South Africa. And the problem that they had as the company was growing was that they were having a breakdown in communication, and the principles and the training and the procedures and also just the sense of culture that they had as a company was becoming fragmented. And this was affecting the bottom line because it was affecting their efficiencies. It was affecting their how their front-facing identity with their clients. The external clients were noticing that things weren't running so smoothly. Things weren't being communicated so clearly. So after I went in and we sat down with the teams and we looked at how they were communicating and used stories to break down, first of all, what was the problem? Secondly, to come up with appropriate frameworks. Thirdly, to know what the common stories that we were that they needed to tell each other so that they were on the same page. And in this particular case, it had a component of making sure that they were compliant in terms of safety. So I went through that whole process with this company. And as the final session came to an end, the CEO stopped me and he said to me, Annie, you've saved me millions. Now, that really struck a chord with me because you asked about how it translates into revenue. That was a saving that he identified, but he was absolutely convinced that the work that we were doing was going to have that outcome. So revenue isn't just income, revenue can be saving as well. And that story illustrates how we did that using storytelling.
Now, in here, you know, people could tell stories in a variety of ways, right? So in your opinion, is storytelling an emotional manipulation or strategic clarity? Sorry, philosophical question here.
And it's a very apt question. I did a post literally 2 weeks ago on my LinkedIn profile because I was watching one of these talent shows. I won't mention any names. However, this talent show is known for the contestants telling stories that pull at the heartstrings, you know, bring a tear to the eye. And because the idea is that they want to get votes, and if they get votes, then they're more likely to go on and win. So every single one of these contestants has got this heartrending story to the point where my partner rolls his eyes when he doesn't like that show. as he's passing, because I love it, I'm addicted to it, but as he's passing, he rolls his eyes and he'll say, oh, what's the sob story this time? And that is a classic example of what you're talking about, where stories are used for manipulation. And it's something that comes up in my consultations and in my training often, where people say, Annie, you're giving me this tool, and they recognize the power of storytelling. And obviously, at the same time, they recognize how manipulative it can be. And the answer is always to have the right standpoint when you're telling the story, and make sure that when you tell the story, you say, am I genuinely telling this because I want to clarify something, if I want to illuminate something, if I want to help my clients see something that they needed to learn? Is this story genuinely of benefit? Or am I telling this story to get a reaction, get a response, or getting a sale? The only way that you can realistically manage that is to manage yourself. Have integrity and make sure that, you know, and the right people that I work with are unlikely to use manipulation. But it is a topic that comes up. And as I say, it's a topic that I'm writing about in my articles because it's a big no-no.
Now, I've heard, you know, I've participated in several exercises with companies before on the topic of sales strategies, you know, positioning, etc. And most common thing that I always hear is the story is not resonating. And there are, you know, you're the expert, tell me, there are many factors why a story will not resonate. It doesn't stick. People don't remember it. You talked about, you know, that show that engages emotions. So I'm assuming a story has multiple facets, multiple aspects, where it has to engage the logic, the emotion, and a few other traits. You tell me, why would something resonate versus something that doesn't resonate?
Because it's the classic principle of sales. You're selling the change that the person will experience. You're not selling what you believe is the solution. If the story doesn't resonate, you're focusing on what you think is going to be the right story for that person in terms of the change, in terms of the problem that you're solving. But you probably haven't listened to understand exactly what that person wants to do after they've engaged with your project. I always use the expression, it's about futures, not features. If you're selling something that can show somebody having a better future after they've interacted with your product or service, it is going to resonate because you will be nailing it exactly where they are in terms of what they want to understand. You tell a story that shows the future with them using your product, and how that will look and feel. And the story should be descriptive. The story should obviously describe what you do as a solution, but it should put them in the picture of, this is what my outcome will be like. This is what my life will be like after I've interacted with it. It will resonate if you listen and respond appropriately and make sure, as I say, they can see themselves in the story better off with your product or service.
You know, I think what you're alluding to here, and I'm going to come out and say it, is you have to customize your story to your audience. You cannot use a one generic story that marketing put out there if you're working for a large company or if you're a single entrepreneur and use that story on everybody. It becomes very dull. It becomes, yeah, here comes Robin with his story again. Nothing new. It has to be factored in who is your audience. Basically, in North America, we say read the room. Read the room, who you're presenting to, and modify your story based on who are the audience. What tend to happen is in many organizations, for positive or for negative, a lot of people follow the line. Basically, you know, they go to the marketing training or they go to the sales training, and, you know, the story being told, and people remember that and memorize it, and then go just, you know, say it the way it is being told to be said. There is a huge deficiency in that. There's a huge risk in that, because we could be telling the wrong story to the wrong audience and wasting everybody's time in that one. We have to be, I think you agree with the fact that we probably have to be, think on our feet, adjust the story to whoever we're talking to. Is that part of your training?
It is indeed. It's adjusting the story to who you're talking to, but it's also having a bank of stories that you can call on at any given moment in any given situation.
I love that. A library of stories. That's beautiful.
That's what we do, because then you're less likely to be caught short having a story that doesn't fit the listener. So the work that we do is to identify a suite of stories or a menu of stories by understanding your particular, as you correctly say, the target market's needs, pains, aspirations, hopes, and fears, making sure that you understand what those are, having a bank of stories that reflects what you've researched, what you've thought about, and making sure that, for example, if it's a sales team that I'm working with, we have those stories and we extract them from that team, from what they understand from the history of the company, what the solutions are, the feedback they've had from the clients themselves. They will have client stories, and these are the best ones you can tell. When the customer is the hero, the best stories you can tell are, this is what happened when I used your product, this is why it worked for me. And once you have a bank of stories, then you're going to have these at your mental fingertips. Now, also, you have to understand if you're talking about verbal storytelling. So what you're talking about here is verbal storytelling. So that's going to be distinct from written storytelling or video storytelling. So that's when you have to sort of understand when you'll have to think on your feet. Once you have that bank of stories at your fingertips, then you move into, if it's a verbal storytelling situation, such as a sales call or an investment pitch, then you know, move into the active listening part. Because once you have the correct questioning process, and once you employ active listening, and once you continue to refine through that listening process, you will be able to say, and this is what we train in, this is a story that you need to hear. It's the mirror story, for example, where somebody will tell you a story and you'll be able to say, oh, yes, I've got a similar example that I can share with you. It builds incredible empathy. It builds credibility. It makes you sound like an expert. So it starts with that bank of stories. And then, of course, the training comes in to just how to actually convey that smoothly and clearly. And again, with integrity, so that it doesn't sound false. That's all part of what we do.
Now, you have the story lab sessions that you hold. In your 90-minute story lab session, what actually happened? Can you walk us through the process?
We have a number of story labs. So the first one, we start with an exploratory session just to understand what your needs and goals are. And then the story lab, the first story lab will be customized to whatever the needs and goals we identified in the discovery call. So the initial story lab, we start with the classic stories that you need, which is going to be perhaps your origin story, your pain point story, and your customer success story. Now, those are the process is a questionnaire that I've created, but I can honestly say, having done thousands of these, I never actually stick to that. It's just the general outline. But the way it works is that provides sort of a framework, but we always meander. And then the meandering is where the magic happens. Because once a person, I might start with a question such as, what do you think makes you unique? That's your unique selling point or your icon factor story. And then they will start talking that, and then I will press. I will say, well, are you sure that that's what makes you unique? And tell me a story that really nails that down, or how would you actually tell that story? And then we meander around that framework. So the quick answer is that it is almost like an interview, but it's intuitive, analytical. And then the magic ingredient is that I'm analyzing in real time. And that is also something that people describe it as a gift, because I listen and I sort of go into this mental state where I say, okay, this is what I'm hearing. And then as I say, I feed it back, and people will say, oh my goodness, that is remarkable. Once you have that, it becomes a recorded asset for that you further unpack and analyze. And you do use AI to help you do that. I've trained my AI so that they can do the story analysis. They build on what I've done. But it is essentially an intuitive, but also expertise-driven consultation. And it can be 190 minutes or it can be 1290 minutes, depending on the journey.
Now, when you go through the session, Annie, do you find people discovering things that surprises them?
Always. I have tears on a regular basis when people see themselves in a way that they never, it's a beautiful thing when people suddenly see themselves in a way that they never thought of before. This is what I'm working with my wonderful individual clients. Oh, they see their business in a way that they never thought of before. And this can happen after you've been sitting with a business for like 15 years. You know, they will say, oh my goodness, I can't believe it's been this long and I didn't see that before. So they always have that. And in the team sessions, in the team training, that moment of discovery is when you see your colleagues differently. So they'll always be, I mean, literally always, they'll say, I never knew that about you. That's wonderful. So yes, that moment of new discovery happens all the time. But, it, you know, the point is that you have that beautiful moment. But the difference, I think, between storytelling and storytelling for business is that you take those moments and you think how you can translate them into something that can be applied to a structured process of sales or marketing or even public speaking for business.
Now, you know, you started the conversation by saying, you know, in your session, you would ask the question, what makes you unique? Now, I've asked that question many times, and everybody seems to agree that what makes them unique in their situation is the people, because everybody operates in certain industries and all industries pretty much are the same. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. You're a lawyer, you're a doctor, you own a law firm, whatever. You own a market research industry company, or you own, it doesn't matter what practice you're in. At the end of the day, you're not operating with no competitors. Every competitor is around you. They pretty much do the same with a little bit of feature augmentation here and there. At the essence of things, if you are in an industry, you're pretty much delivering. I work in the localization industry. So the translation industry is pretty much the same. You take content from one language, put it to another language. So in the top end of it, everybody's the same. But when I ask the question, say, our people are unique. Of course. I mean, that's the most common denominator being uniqueness. We're all unique in our own individuality. But how far does this, our people are what makes us unique, travel in your storytelling? Is that valid? And how much valid is that? And how much weight does it hold?
One of the signature, what would I call it? One of the signature outcomes from the storytelling process with my business is what we call the icon factor. Now, I coined that deliberately because I wanted to move away from the idea of the unique selling point, which has kind of been done to death in the sense that we've heard it too often. And so it becomes a bit of a gray waste. The icon factor is uniqueness that's taken to a higher level of distinctness, of differentiation. It's something that almost has the ability to change the conversation about your business or your industry. The reason that I wanted to do that is because I'm fascinated by uniqueness. I'm fascinated by what makes uniqueness. I'm fascinated by what makes people, whether it's companies or individuals, iconic. And for me, uniqueness was inadequate. It wasn't enough. I often talk about the people who are the thought leaders in a sector as having that icon factor. And one of the ways that we arrive at that, that differentiates from the general, we're unique because of our people, is uniqueness comes from a combination of two things that are not normally found together. And that creates a whole new understanding of what you do. And it has the ability to create almost a paradigm shift in the sector or industry that you've got, because it's not just unique. It's like, that's what we all need to be talking about now. So we endeavor to always find that icon factor for our clients because it takes that concept of uniqueness to a whole other level. It's uniqueness that changes the conversation in your sector. That's what we go for. And through the story analysis, we always find it.
Now, in the various industries right now, specifically, we're having a conversation here in Canada around, we have a conference coming up with the Language Industry Association around the use of a human being or a human professionals inside of a largely tech-driven industries. And we talk about the value of the human inside of a tech-driven industries. And on this channel, I'll talk about it a lot, actually. There are certain things you can use technology for, but there are other things. It's like almost there's a firewall. You can't use technology to replace a human in those instances. So there are use cases, and everybody has a hard time articulating that. Is there any advice for that, for those major events that they're taking place right now? And like I read a report the other day, there's 600,000 people are going to be losing their job in 2026 because of AI. A lot of companies like Salesforce, etc., they're regretting laying off people because of AI. And they're trying to go back silently and hire these people back again. What would be the story that people need to tell about the value of a human? Just give us an example. About a human being being involved in processes, in delivering services that technology will miss automatically.
The obvious one that comes to mind without having, it's a difficult question, but the one that comes to mind is that I work with a lot of life coaches.
Yep.
And they often come to me because they need help story to clarify what they do, especially if they're working in a very esoteric or abstract space. And the intuitive journey that they go through with their clients is of such a personal nature, especially if you're dealing with a client who is a coach, for example, who is dealing with somebody that has a particular kind of trauma. They need to speak to somebody. One of my coaches, who I absolutely adore because of the work she does, she unfortunately lost children of her own due to cancer. And then she devoted her coaching journey to helping other people deal with this, whether they're the victims who are sort of dealing with this awful diagnosis or whether the families are the ones who are supporting them. And she's done amazing work, but she's taken it to a high level of expertise in helping them navigate the journey. But that moment of soul-touching understanding of dealing with somebody who, as I've lost and you have lost, to help me cope, I need to be speaking to somebody who understands this at a visceral level of what it's like to suffer a tragedy like that and come through. And her icon factor was about how you come through. Now, if you can show me how AI can do that, I applaud you. There is just something that happens in the marrow of your bones, of your DNA, when you know you are speaking to another human being who has experienced something as profound as that, that cannot be replicated.
And no, I know cannot that be machine.
I can use that example of a coach, but if you give me more time, I know how that same concept can be expanded elsewhere.
You know, 100%, because most of the people are rushing now to automate, to save costs, etc., but we neglect the fact that there are many, many things that we use cases for us as a human being that we need a human being to feel with us, to react to what we're doing, to react to what we're saying in a compassionate way, in an understanding way, that machines and robots are not going to be there anytime soon. They may be able to get you a drink at a bar, but who cares? Or deliver the food at a restaurant, so that's fine. But to sit down and listen to your life story, as you mentioned earlier, and that's unbelievable, to be honest with you. Now, in a business setting, can storytelling be used in other instances? For example, can it be used in to influence perhaps negotiation outcome? If you're negotiating a contract or negotiating a deal with somebody, or can it be used also to stop something from pricing, for instance, from being discounted or from being dropped? Can those commercial aspect of a business be influenced by the story?
Okay. So one of the, I remember I talked to you about the 8 different kinds of stories we've got. In the negotiation process, one of the most powerful stories you can have is called the insight story. It's a profoundly effective story in pivoting a very delicate or sensitive part of the negotiation. When there is this kind of still element of doubt in whether the person wants to go ahead with your proposition. What is an insight story? The best way to describe it is when you imagine somebody is talking to you about an intervention or a solution they have, and you say to, you give them a piece of advice and you get this reaction. I know that everybody's had this and they know what I'm talking about. A person will be listening to you and they'll go, my goodness, that's incredibly important to know. Thank you. I didn't know that. How did I last this long? I mentioned something like this earlier without knowing that. And it gives this remarkable moment of expertise, but it floods that person with gratitude. Don't forget, when you're telling stories and listening to stories, there's hormones that are pumping into your brain, oxytocin and all these endorphins. When you tell an insight story, that person will have this flood of gratitude because you will tell them something that really, really makes a difference to their understanding. And it's almost like you're giving them a gift. Like, if you do this thing, this will be a much better outcome for you. Whether you say yes or no to this negotiation, here's the gift of this wisdom and knowledge. And people will say, in their mind, psychologically, they will say, that person really knows their stuff. I want more of that. And then it tips that negotiation in your favor. When we work with our trainees, we always say, what's your insight story? And it has to be done in preparation for a specific negotiation where you've done your homework on the company you're in negotiations with. What's the insight story that you're going to drop when you need to? In terms of the question that you talked about, which was the discounting, what you can do to help with that is, well, you know that we've got the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. That's where you start to signal your walk away point. So when you're in a negotiation and it looks as if people are pushing for a discount, if you start to signal that you're not 100% reliant on this, you start to signal, listen, I do have a point at which I will walk away. People will start to say, okay, we can't push them too far because they're not desperate enough. So that's a very sort of blunt way of putting it. So you have a story that you can tell that signals that you have a walk away point. And again, it's one of those psychological things that it's in negotiation, it is called influence, that people will say, okay, I can't push my luck here because I can actually lose this whole thing. So those are two kind of more, the insight story and the your best alternative to a negotiated agreement, your walk away point. Have those ready, have the stories that illustrate that and play them like a card or a chess piece in that negotiation game.
I'm assuming you're also encouraging people to practice these stories before they go live in public. Am I correct?
The training always has role play. We always have role play.
Practice.
Yeah. We role play with difficult questions, role play with each other where they give each other a hard time, you know, or if it's, it depends on the context, you know.
It has to feel natural though, Annie, right? It cannot feel made up. It has to feel natural when it comes out, right?
Practice actually helps you sound natural because you're not struggling to remember, now I say this, now I say that. If it runs smoothly, then you get the story down and then you can freestyle. And so, yes, it depends on the context. You know, if it's sales and negotiation, that's a different type of storytelling to if you're on stage doing public speaking. But yes, you know your story and you're ready to tell it.
Now, I know you train public speaking individuals and on developing their signature story and how they position it, how they formulate it, how they tell it, etc. What is a trademark story? What should every leader, and why should every leader have one?
Your trademark story is the story that best shows the problem you solve. And the trademark story is the one that shows why you are the best person to do it. Now, that's two different things. So it shows the problem you solve. It illustrates the before and after in such a powerful way that it is your signature. It's the one that has the best fit for as many different situations that you find it in. This is what I do, and this is the outcome. And it also shows why you are the go-to person for that particular solution. So your trademark story, we have this, my storytelling coach talks about this thing called the tapoof. And when I'm doing training, I'll say to people, have you got your tapoof? And people will say, huh? What on earth is that? And it's an acronym. It's T-P-O-U-C-F. The problem only you can fix. That's part of your trademark story. What is the problem only you can fix? You can see how that relates to the icon factor. You can see how obviously it relates to your unique selling point. But your trademark story should be the best one that positions you as the only place to go for that. And that's what we always endeavor. You must always, if you only have one story, it must have that.
You know, the problem you can only fix, I took note of that. And I'm going to remember that now. And for the audience, I'm hoping you're learning a lot here. I'm learning a lot. And thanks, Annie, for joining me on this journey of recording this podcast today. This is very, very interesting. Because most people miss the boat on that stuff. Most people read the brochure and they just go repeat it to the customer. Most people like tell the customer or via email or in verbal or however they're presenting, a very robotic way of delivering. What you're talking about here is including your passion as a person. Once you build the story, you're injecting yourself into the story. And then you're becoming part of the story. You're not necessarily positioning yourself anymore as somebody paid me to tell you this. So here you are. I'm telling you this now. And it becomes so robotic. Nobody wants to listen to it. I remember when I was selling, a few years ago, I walked into a meeting one time, a boardroom setting. I was doing a presentation. It was a high stake one. And when I finished, the people were asking me if I own the company. And to me, that was the best compliment I ever received. Why? Even I don't care if I win or lose the deal. But the fact that I was able to present with such a passion, such a conviction, that I was at a point, people thought I own it. That, brilliant, to me, tells me that this is the level that I reached and I should stay that. That stories that I blended into my presentation, and I guess for everybody who's listening, this is where you need to be to elevate yourself. You're not a paid salesperson anymore. You're not a paid business person anymore. You are a messenger. You are delivering messaging to your customers that you believe deep in your heart. You can't fake that. You can't fake it 100%. You can't fake it. If you don't believe it in your heart, it's going to come out wrong. It's going to come out unbelievable and nobody's going to believe you. Practice to believe the Kool-Aid.
Yes. That's that. You've nailed so much of my philosophy behind this, because you are a sales specialist. You're one of the best. I mean, your story, by the way, that you told me is remarkable, so impressive. But you understand when I say that if you believe, you will be more successful in sales. It starts with belief, and the belief has to be ingrained. It has to come from you, as you say. But that's why telling your own stories, understanding your own stories is important. What do you bring to the table in the solution that you're offering? What has been your experience with your clients? What have you done that you're proud of? All of that helps build that belief, and that translates so that when you do tell that story, it comes across as genuine. And there is an experiment that was run, I believe, by Harvard Business School, but don't quote me on that. I'll have to check, but it is a genuine experiment where they wired a storyteller and a story listener to almost like an MRI scan. And what happens is, as the person telling the story goes on with the story, their brain waves start to mirror each other. It's the closest thing we have to a form of telepathy. And that's why it's so powerful for so many types of interactions in the business world. But that's exactly also why that passion is almost contagious, because it's your brain waves are mirroring, but also your emotions, your hopes, your dreams are mirroring. And that is part of what the belief comes from, that belief that you transmit, because they feel it almost as if they're in you. There's a part of your brain that can't tell the difference between fact and fantasy, incidentally, when you listen to a story. So all of that builds that sense of connection.
And you know, ladies and gentlemen, the listeners out there and the viewers, Annie's talking about telepathic connection. And I think we just have one right now, like right in this second. She just read my second question, my next question. She just read my next question without even knowing. She's discovering the pattern of my thinking and she's reading my next connection. So I was going to ask you, actually, what is the psychological shift that someone makes to make this story compelling? And I think you just described it, that emotional engagement, that people on the same wavelength, we call it wavelength or emotional connection.
Yes.
So yeah, is that what makes the, if I was and I was thinking about this and I haven't done that, but maybe down the road I will do that, a public speaking engagement, for instance. If I was becoming a public speaker and I need to engage the audience, and that's for the public speakers out there or people who are hoping to become public speakers, what would be your advice from a psychological perspective to engage these individuals that they're talking
about? Tell your own story. Obviously, you do your research to make sure that what you're talking about is relevant to the target audience. And
is there like a balance, Annie, between vulnerability and oversharing?
Yes, but I'm British. You're asking the wrong person. We're that much closer to overfeeling that we're oversharing. But you have to be obviously cognizant of what's appropriate, and you have to be cognizant of what is might make people feel uncomfortable. And you all have to be cognizant of what makes you uncomfortable. And this is something I'm always doing with my clients. When I'm telling them to tell a story, I say, never tell a story that makes you feel uncomfortable. If you don't want to tell that story, then don't tell it. Only tell the stories that you feel comfortable with. And you said it yourself earlier, read the room. You know when you can maybe crack a joke that's perhaps a little bit on the edge of risque, if you feel like that, but please be careful. Genuine vulnerability is incredibly engaging. And again, it mustn't be manipulative, but yes, I do believe you can overshare. And that can also happen if you're going for sort of like surface level manipulation as well.
For the ladies and gentlemen listening to this podcast, Annie, also worth mentioning that she led the U.S. State Department scholarship program in South Africa and delivered education projects in several townships in South Africa. How did working in education NGOs shape how you see businesses today?
I learned more about resourcefulness and resilience from those kids than I've learned anywhere else. They will tell you, they will show you 1,000 different ways to solve something precisely because they have so little. And one of the best things you have in your toolkit as a business owner is resilience and resourcefulness. And that I will keep going. I will put one foot in front of the other. Those kids have got that down because they have to. So when I go forward, when I take what I've learned from them and I'm working with business owners, it's all about finding the stories that illustrate your resilience and finding the stories that keep you going, because sometimes things get tough, as we know, especially for small business owners and solopreneurs. So yeah, they were my first business teachers in a way. Funnily enough, I did do entrepreneurial projects with them. That's where, before we I did. Started doing this. Yes, and I was very proud of myself when I went into the classroom of 13-year-olds and I sort of said, we're going to start an entrepreneurial project. And how many of you have ever tried to sell anything and have your own business? And I was expecting one or two hands. And I promise you, like 2/3 of them put their hand up. And I'm like, these 13-year-olds are already selling stuff because it's how they survive. So the girls will be doing hair and getting a little bits of money. The boys would be going to the wholesalers and buying bags of chips and selling them outside the school at the end of the day. And this wasn't just for pocket money. This was for help their money, their families survive. They were all little entrepreneurs already. So lots of lessons from them that help shape what I do today.
You know, this is so admirable. And I want to congratulate you on behalf of the audience and myself for the work you've done in that area. I really appreciate your volunteering, working, supporting, helping in any capacity you can with these individuals. You know, comparatively speaking to North American schools, you'll never hear that. I mean, schools in North America have a different kind of worries. We don't want to talk about politics on this channel, but that's completely different. I mean, from what you're telling me, 2/3 of your classrooms are raising their hands saying, I'm doing something. Yes. You know, it's crazy, but it's positively crazy. And I admire that. So
I like that expression.
And you talk a lot about instilling self-belief, which is very important. Self-belief is in my opinion, it's a catalyst of anything you want to do going forward. If you don't have self-belief as an individual, may as well become couch potato in North America and watch TV. That should be one objective. But if you have self-belief as a foundational to success, how does that show up in a boardroom? Do you find self-belief sometimes becomes a competitive nature between too many self-believers in the boardroom? Or, you know, they got that sixth sense of self-aware in addition to self-belief?
I think you're getting into my coaches who are the leadership specialists here. So I'm going to have to possibly use some borrowed wisdom, because I wouldn't say that it's necessarily my speciality in terms of self-belief in the boardroom. But I do think that there's a fine line between self-belief and arrogance, and making sure that you monitor yourself to try and do that. I know that's easier said than done. But also, I think you mentioned the word vulnerability, and again, borrowing wisdom from my business coach clients, what's happening in the leadership space, which is exciting, is encouraging leaders to be vulnerable, encouraging leaders to be able to turn around and say, well, actually, I don't have the answer to that. Encouraging leaders to give the space for somebody else to step in and come up with a solution, maybe even in a boardroom situation where they'll say, I'm listening, and I concede the floor to you, to give you the floor for your ideas. That comes from having so much self-belief that you're confident to show the vulnerability that comes from that. Does that make sense?
It does. It does.
People
it does.
Who have genuine self-belief can allow chinks of vulnerability to come out. So I guess in a boardroom situation, that's how I would describe that as showing up.
How important is, in your opinion, Annie, now in the age of, content being generated on the fly, some content is not being written by the individual we think that they wrote the content. Let's talk a little bit about authenticity as an advantage right now. Do you feel, I'm sure in your world, authenticity is all about authenticity in your world. But do you feel like the non-authentic stories are finding their way into the world, and how do you decipher which is authentic, which is not? How do you elevate the authentic stories up? And because those are the genuine one.
It's true that, the AI generated stories are so good now that it's almost becoming actually impossible to tell. It's sad, but true. When a story is real, when a story is authentic, there's still some kind of content that you can read it and it just sounds so plastic that you can tell. But that's going to fade away as it becomes much more refined. One answer that I have is that you have to look at the source of that story. So, for example, if you come to Storied, we're the ones creating the social media campaign for our clients, you can trust that those stories are real. So we are known. We want to become increasingly known for real human generated stories. So that is almost an inadequate compensation that you can have by saying, if you go to this person, you know that they are, it's part of their code of ethics. That's one thing that you can do. But also we're moving very much into you talked about this earlier about personal branding. If you're telling a genuine story about yourself and you push that through AI, to tighten up the grammar and so forth, that's actually okay because it started with a human story. And there's something about a personal branding story that when you read it, you say, okay, this happened. Again, it's very inadequate, but that's the approach that we're taking.
Now let's, for the sake of time here, I've got a few more questions, but they're short answer, and then we'll wrap it up for the audience. And one of my question is, can you tell me one mistake, Annie, that leaders make in their communication? Probably they know or they don't know, but one mistake, it's obvious.
Lack of clarity.
And what is the one underrated storytelling skill?
Listening.
I love that one. And one exercise every founder should do this week. What do you think they should do this week? One exercise.
To poop.
Yeah, I love that one. The problem that you can only solve.
Yes.
I love that one. And what story are you currently rewriting in your life, in your own life?
Apart from business.
Yeah. What story are you rewriting in your own life?
This is going to sound strange. I got a puppy. And when I grew up, I was never allowed to have pets. And my boyfriend bought this puppy home. And I'm like, what is that? What are we supposed to do with that? Now I love her to bits. I love her to bits. She's like my little bundle of joy. So that's the story. I'm now
Congratulations.
An animal owner.
Congratulations. You'll get used to it eventually.
It's the first thing that came to mind. But yeah, that's the story that's being rewritten.
Excellent. No, and I thank you so much for joining me. Any last thoughts, comments, Annie? What do you think of the conversation?
I loved it. Thank you so much. The questions were really thoughtful, but they really dug deep into some things that I would have loved to share, important things I wanted to share. And your manner is wonderful to work alongside. So thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming along the journey for the conversation today. Thank you so much, Annie. Annie Al-Wufua. And I really appreciate it. Thank you for being with me. Thanks for the audience. Thanks for listening in on the audio channel. And thanks for coming in on our YouTube channel. I really appreciate you liking the content, sharing the content. This channel has been growing by leaps and bounds. And it's all because of our wonderful guests that they come in and share their stories on this channel. And thanks for the audience, of course, for listening in and for making us part of your podcast journey. Until next time, this is Robin Ayoub and Annie Al-Wufua signing off, and I'll see you at the next episode. Appreciate it.